Mr. Gontosh, real one. Whereabouts were you born?
I was born in Lodz, Ulica 16 Kamienna.
And this is the name of the street?
That's the name of the street, yeah.
Can you tell me about your family background?
Yes, my father was in the building trade, working for somebody else. My mother was a housewife. I had a brother who was 4 years older than me, called Sulek. Sister, she was 2 years older than me, called Sarah.
What were the family economic circumstances?
Our economic circumstances were below average, I would say, for Poland at that time. We lived in a one-roomed flat, which was a bedroom at night and a living room during the day.
So was life a struggle for your family?
Yes, I would say it was a great struggle, but they certainly tried their best to bring us up.
Did you go without food, for example?
Not without food, but we certainly were deprived of perhaps better type of food, but we weren't starving. Our parents were the type of parents that would make sure that perhaps they might go hungry, but we had enough.
What about the question of unemployment? Did that ever affect your father?
No, I was too young perhaps to realize that, because there were times he didn't work, but what the reasons were, I don't know. Because until the war broke out, I was obviously young. I was 10 years when the war broke out. I was 7 when I started going to school, which was Powszechna Szkoła, which in Polish is when you start school at 7. And until then, I attended Jewish studies, which were the Orthodox type, to learn to pray and so on, but not actual state education.
So a study of the holy books?
That's right, yes, and to pray.
What languages could you speak?
Until I started going to the school, the state school, which was called Szkoła Powszechna, I spoke only Yiddish. Very, very little, even Polish. Living in that country, but I had a very little knowledge of Polish for the simple reason, when I used to go to Heide with the Jewish kids, we were speaking in Jewish all the time, in Yiddish. And when I started going to the state school, that's when I acquired the Polish. My parents, amongst themselves, spoke Yiddish only.
Were your parents fluent in Polish?
No, they had a knowledge of Polish, but they were not fluent, no.
Was your initial lack of Polish a handicap to you?
Not really, because the whole environment where we were and what we did, especially our friends, were all of the same background as myself. So it was not a handicap until perhaps it might have been later on if the war wouldn't have broken out. Then it would have been, because it would have taken me that little longer to get in front with the Polish.
What about your parents' religious attitudes? Were they believers?
Yes. In Poland, the majority, I would say 97% of the Jewish people were strong believers. You take a Polish Jew who was perhaps middle way, was as Orthodox as perhaps a very Orthodox Jew here in England. So we were strong believers, worshippers and followers of the Jewish religion.
So you wouldn't mix socially with Gentiles?
As a kid I didn't, because until I was 10, you know, when the war broke out, I had no need to mix, because where I lived, the whole setup there was Jewish. It was like a ghetto, but it was an open ghetto. So again, it didn't matter to me at that time. I didn't have the need, or I didn't miss it, but we were basically with Jewish people.
Did you know whether your parents had any political attitudes?
I don't think so. There's not many Jewish people had any political attitude because it wasn't in any of our interest to mix in politics. The Jewish people were better off not mixing in politics.
Can you explain that?
Yes, because the general feeling towards the Jewish people by the Gentiles in Poland was hostile, always has been. And I noticed it as a kid, and we were told by our parents. And we knew it when we went in the street. We were called Bloody Jew, which in Polish is Parszywy Żydzie. And we were deprived of many things. And we were shown that we are a second-class citizen all the time.
Did you suffer any anti-Semitic violence?
Yes. Also, the school I attended was basically all Jewish people because it was in the same area where the Jewish people lived. But when we used to come out from school, we used to get involved in many fights. Simply, they were waiting for us, and because we were Jewish, yes. And maybe partly the way we were dressed, because we all used to have special payers and Jewish caps. And they would start on us, yes. And there were fights, and they were always the majority. They would always win.
Was it vicious violence, or was it just childish puncher?
Well, with us, it was childish because we were children. But with the elder ones, it was vicious, yes. Deliberate anti-Semitic violence.
Did you witness any vicious violence yourself?
Yes.
Pre-war?
On many occasions, I've seen very Orthodox Jewish people with beards being beaten, kicked, and by a group of youth, and ran away after, and left them to bleed.
What do you think was behind the violence? Do you think it was political parties, or the church, or what?
I don't know. I wouldn't like to say it was the church, but there certainly was the anti-Semitic feeling towards the Jew. It was the bringing up, it was from the beginning, a child in a Gentile family would be told that the Jew is not here, and he should go back to Palestine. This was at that time before Israel was established, as you know, it was Palestine. The Jew should go back to Palestine. They shouldn't be here. That's what it was told. I mean, I know that for a fact because I witnessed it myself once. The yard where we lived, it was a janitor, a Gentile janitor. And I did play with their kids on a few occasions. And when I was in their house, I was told to get out, to go to Palestine. Should go to Palestine.
Did you ever know of any Gentiles who stood up for the Jews?
One or two, yes. I wouldn't say there were any particular from religious Catholics or anything. I don't know what background. But on one or two occasions, yes. But there weren't many.
What would they do?
Well, they would probably, if one was told the Bloody Jew or he was, beaten or something, he would come up and say, leave him alone or something like this. But they wouldn't go out of his way too much.
Was there anything the Jews could do to stop this?
No. First of all, the Jew was never a fighting force there. They were too religious. Perhaps that was partly our fault, I don't know. But having said that, they would always be the majority. And we were told at home by our parents, keep out of trouble. If there's trouble, run. That's what we were told. And we usually listened to our parents.
Was there at that time, did you ever witness any Polish anti-Semitic parties who conducted demonstrations on the streets, like the Black Shirts in Britain?
No, I not many, but there was one instance which it was in our street, just because I lived in Komnena, was basically a Jewish street. It was a long street with big apartment blocks of about maybe 40, 50 families in each block. And on one occasion, it was just before the Passover. There's a few hundred came. This was just before the war, I think. It must have been about maybe 12 or 18 months before the war. It's a few hundred young, what might be the age group about 16 to 20, with swastikas. That was before the war. With swastikas. And I'll give you the interpretation in English. It won't be long and will kill you all. And there were hundreds of them. And the police were there, the Polish police, nobody did anything about it. This was before the war. The Germans weren't even there yet. But we learned later who they were. They were what they were called the Volksdeutsche. That means a German who lived in Poland.
Were there many of those in Łódź?
We learned about it, that there were many, yes. And during the interview later, when we get to the part when the war started, you will find out exactly how many there were and how quickly the whole thing changed.
You mentioned Palestine, but do you know what your parents' attitude was to the question of emigration from Poland, either to Palestine or elsewhere?
Well, my parents in particular didn't think much of emigration for the simple reason they couldn't afford it. There were Jews who were thinking of emigrating, not only to Palestine, because Palestine was restricted to, before the war, there was no emigration to Palestine for Jewish people. If there was, the quota was so thin that it couldn't take many. There were illegal emigrants, as you know, and the illegal emigrants were stopped in Palestine. They were imprisoned, as you know, by the British at that time. And some of them, in fact, were executed.
So, as far as you know, your parents took no interest at all in politics?
No.
Can we come on to the outbreak of the war now, and can you tell me what you personally remember of it?
Yes. September 39, beginning of September 39. It was a Friday, about 11 o'clock, I remember the sirens start coming on, very loud. And we were told at that time, because there weren't many radios, there was only maybe two radios in the whole block, you know. We were told that there were maneuvers, you know, because they were preparing for war. And we were told not to panic, not to do anything about it. But within minutes, we heard bombs falling. And then, of course, we realized that it's the real thing. And then it started coming over the radio that Germany has declared war. And we all started panicking. I remember my father, I think, was still at work at that time. I was home with my mother. My sister was in school. My brother was in school. I think I was ill that particular morning, so I was home. And within an hour, they all came back because all the schools closed, the works closed, they came back. And that day, it was bombing more or less all the time. Also, nothing was hit very near us, you know, because we lived away from the factories area, or the industrial area, but they were bombing all the time, and of course we started planning and so on. All the men from our block in our streets prepared to run away. My father, all the other men, and also the owner of this building, who owned the building, he was partners with a Jewish man. They all went away. That was, I think, the following day. No, it wouldn't be Saturday, they wouldn't have gone, it would have been on Sunday. On Sunday, they started marching, and some of them got lifts because there was no trains at that time going. And they started going towards Warsaw because they said that is the way to escape. Because what they were frightened of, that when the Germans come, they'll take all the men to labor camp. I wish that would have only been like that. That would have been nothing, you know. That would have been a godsend. But within a few days, they came back because they were surrounded. And as you know, Lodz fell after 3 days. And it was annexed by the Germans, and it fell into the Third Reich, which was part of Germany. And they were surrounded before they got to Warsaw. They all came back. Some of them perhaps might have got through, but my father, my brother, who was older than me, he went with him. He came back. And this was after a few days. And the owner, who we thought was Polish, came back on his motorbike, Gestapo uniform, swastika armbands, came onto the yard and immediately shouted, Alle Juden raus, in German already, not Polish even, you know, Alle Juden raus, which I think you know what it means.
All Jews out.
All Jews out. And we started panicking, we couldn't believe it, you know, and within minutes, there were dozens of Gestapo with him.
So he was a Volksdeutscher, wasn't he?
He was a Volksdeutscher, yes. And, of course, we had to vacate our apartments, which we did. We went to live with a relative about two streets away called Kilinskiego, which was a sister of my mother. And there we all cluttered in about, because they had their family was six, we were five, must have been about 11, you know, cluttered in, all one large room apartment. And we were struggling. Then it started, day by day, was getting worse and worse and worse. The soldiers started coming into the yards, and as soon as they've seen a Jew, on one particular instance, I saw three ordinary soldiers come in with their guns and everything to the yard where we lived. And they got hold of a Jew with a beard, Payas, tied his hands to the back, stuck a match to his beard, to the Payas, kicked him in the stomach. All we could do is watch. And as soon as somebody started to either protect or help him, he would be shot on the spot. There was no question of even pulling him aside, but he would be shot on the spot. So all the order went. That is within a few days of the Germans walking into Lodz. There was no order. They did what they wanted. So, of course, we knew we had to start being careful. We thought to survive, we have to do everything. We went our own ways. We didn't go out alone. Oh, yeah, there were curfews also imposed on Jewish people because we were ordered to wear yellow stars. And after hours, after dark, we weren't allowed to go out. This was before we went into the ghetto while we still live in a Lodz. I remember one particular instance because I tried to go out to. We obtained ration cards, right? And we had to start going out to get food. And I went with the ration cards to get some food for the family. So I was queuing up. There were queues for both Gentiles and Jews at the beginning. And I'm standing in the queue. And every time I get near, they recognize, first of all, they recognize Jews. You know, without the yellow star, they would still recognize a Jew. But wearing the yellow star was even more, you know, obvious. As I was getting near, I was pulled away by Poles. Pulled away, kicked, get in the back. And I remember one particular day from about 8 in the morning till it went dark, and I still didn't get, and I had to go home without anything. The whole day. That was the Poles. Nothing to do with the Germans. The second day, I went. No, sorry, the second day my brother went, Schulek. And he was treated very similar, like hundreds of others would be treated. And he eventually got it. And when he got it, he got it back, it was grabbed by the Polish people, taking it away.
Just robbed him of the food.
That's right. And nobody would do anything about it. That's perhaps to answer the question that you said before, would anyone, any of the Poles, stand up for a Jew? No one would do anything about it. Whether they were frightened for their own skins, I don't know. But that was the situation. And this went on until... It became worse and worse and worse. This is only part of the ration I'm giving you. There were also... they had lorries, you know, going along the streets, main streets, and they would be rounding up the Jewish people for work, what they call enforced labor. Gezwungen labor, right? And they grabbed you from anywhere. They would come in. We weren't allowed to pray in the synagogues, in the official synagogues, but there were private rooms where the Jewish people would gather in the morning.
Were the synagogues actually closed down then?
The synagogues were closed down a lot straight away. There was no synagogue. But there were little rooms where they were called shtiebels, and they would try and, you know, carry on with the service there.
These were just private houses.
Private houses, that's right. And as long as they would get 10 men, they can pray.
As a quorum.
That's right. So they would come in the morning and come into the yards, grab them out from there or whenever, fill up the lorries, take them away. Sometimes they came back, sometimes they didn't. And those who didn't come back, we know now what happened to them. At that time, we didn't, right?
Were there rumors going around about what was happening to them?
There were rumors going around that they were taken to other camps. But we didn't know anything about gas chambers at that time yet.
They just thought it was labor camps.
They were taken to other labor camps. And everyone was hoping that those men will come back. But we know now it never materialized. This went on and on and on. It became worse. There was no school for us. There was no Jewish education for us anymore. My father still worked because he was taken by, you know, by some of the Polish people to help out, you know, so he was still working a little bit and he earned a little bit of money. But that money didn't even help us because, we couldn't buy the food. And if we did eventually get it, you know, we would be robbed of it. So we were struggling. I mean, if you ask me how we lived, I don't know. But it was a constant struggle.
So your father was still getting occasional employment?
He was still getting occasional employment by the Polish people, yes.
Were the Poles breaking the law by doing that?
No, there was no... At that time, there was no particular law that the Jew can't work. He was not in his own business anymore. All his own businesses were closed. But a Jew could still be employed by a Gentile, if he so wished. Not many were, unfortunately. In spring 1940, we eventually went into the ghetto. And what happened prior to that, the ghetto was prepared for a long time. And slowly, what they did, they got from each district of Lodz so many people into the ghetto, to the Lodz ghetto. And they allocated a room, an apartment, you know, of whatever it consisted, depending on how many people in a family, because we were still the whole family at that time.
When you say there, you mean it was the Germans who were organizing all
the Germans were organizing the ghetto, the preparation of the ghetto.
And was there a wall around it?
Yes, eventually. The ghetto was closed in late summer 1940. They, what they did systematically, because they couldn't, there were, well, they started off with about 300,000 Jews in Lodz. So they couldn't all of a sudden, you know, say, right, everyone gets into the ghetto. It had to be done systematically. And during the course of, I can't remember exactly how long, it's a long time ago, and I was very young, as you appreciate, but over certain months, maybe 3-4 months, the ghetto filled up. And it was organized, there was the Jewish, what they called the Yiddish Gemeinde at that time, it's like the Jewish organization that would take command. And there was someone who was the eldest sort of thing from the Jewish committee, and he was called Rumkowski Chaim. He was made president of the ghetto by the Germans.
Rumkowski who?
Rumkowski Chaim. He's a known character in the history of the Lodz ghetto. He was the first president. And at first he was reasonable good, what we thought he worked for the people in the ghetto. Yeah, when they closed the ghetto, there were from what I believe, there were 200,000 Jews in the ghetto when they closed it. So Rumkowski Chaim organized a Sonderkommando in the ghetto of the Jewish police.
What exactly is a Sonderkommando?
It's a Jewish police force. Don't forget, 200,000 people is like a town. It had to have its organization, it had to have its own police, it had to have all its own officials in various offices and so on. They organized factories which we worked, you know, the products went to the Germans, but we had to work on it. All this took some organization, and there was a Jewish committee with a Sonderkommando who prepared all this. At the beginning, they were very sympathetic to the people, but as experience has shown in many other past equivalent, you know, situations, people change. These people, also they were Jewish, but the sympathy has gone. We were also, you know, being badly treated, not only by the Germans, because the Germans are then outside. We don't see the Germans anymore. We just see our own Jewish people mistreating us.
Why do you think that change came about?
Well, I think systematically people are, well, it's human nature. I don't know how I would react. Thank God I never had to. But people become, they think perhaps that they will improve their own situation. That's why you had Kapos, which will come later, into the camps. Kapos who turned